Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and this evening we are talking events in the United States of America. Martin, have you ever been?
No, I've never been in the United States, and I have family over there this last 20, 30 years.
And they don't want you to come, no?
Yeah, well, I'm the black sheep. Every family needs a black sheep, so I'm it, you know?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't want you to come either. It was a bit of a godsend. Anyway, look, bit of housekeeping. We have obviously several podcasts out at the moment. I would recommend people go check out the Glow West today on consent and the police podcast on Joanna telling the story about her son, Niall. It's powerful stuff, absolutely powerful stuff. Again, all of this happens because people put their hands in their pocket and chip in. It's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. We do have no sponsors. We have no one else helping us out. We rely on you listeners. Back to the show. We are delighted to be rejoined on the line by writer and one of our favorite people and soft-spoken John Schwartz from The Intercept. John, how are you keeping?
You know, I'm pretty good, all things considered. I know I've mentioned this before. I am always happy to talk to you out in a place of the world where everyone is not completely nuts.
Yeah.
Well, only some of us.
It's
right, exactly. That's a big improvement from everyone.
It's, John, just the last time we were talking in the build-up, in the run-up to the election, and we kind of, you know, we thought, yeah, people said, oh, he won't concede. Sure, he won't. And now when he didn't concede, we were still surprised by it. Were you surprised?
To be honest, no, I was not surprised. I mean, if you look at Donald Trump's life, this is what he has done in every situation, where if he thinks he's losing, you know, if he thinks he's going bankrupt, he files 97,000 crazy lawsuits, and he just tries to push the whole process to take as long as possible until everyone else just gets exhausted and gives him what he wants. So he has one strategy, which has served him well his entire life, and he's trying it out again now. Like, this time it's not going to work unless things go extremely wrong. Like, the possibility of it working is very close to zero. But that doesn't mean that he's not doing just incredible damage to the basic facts of like having a democratic country, which is that you need people to trust that elections, you know, without evidence to the contrary, are honest. Like, that's a real, like, just basic aspect of societal trust. And he's trying to absolutely destroy that in the United States. And he's probably going to succeed. And it does not bode well for the future. There's going to be another Donald Trump who's a lot smarter and a lot less lazy.
It doesn't bode well. I mean, he is an expert at throwing shit in the game, an absolute expert at it. And he does it to muddy the waters. But the CDC has come out today and said, don't do Thanksgiving. Are Americans going to accept that?
Well, before I get to that, I have to say, you know, the thing is, obviously, you're right about Trump throwing like whatever shit he can find. And the most amazing thing about him is like no one had any idea that there was this much shit to throw. And there were these like specific new kinds of shit that no one had ever imagined before. So it's not just the quantity, it's like the variety too. So it's a lot of new and different shit. But anyway, about
maybe that's why they went to Total Landscaping to get all that shit.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, yeah, exactly. You have to, if nothing else, you have to admire them for their creativity and effort. But about Thanksgiving, honestly, I am not seeing my own family for Thanksgiving. And I think that if you understand what is actually going on, you would not do that. It's, I mean, like my goal is not to, not necessarily protect myself, because I think I probably would be okay, knock on wood, if I got COVID, but I really do not want to be the vector that brings it to all of my elderly relatives. I mean, I cannot imagine a greater curse than, you know, accidentally knocking off your aunt just to go somewhere and eat turkey. Like, it's not worth it. So I am not having Thanksgiving with my family, and I don't know about Christmas, probably not. And I just hope, along with everybody else, hope and pray that one of these vaccines will pan out in the way that it seems like they're going to. Like, that's such incredibly good news, I'm trying not to think about it because I don't want my heart broken.
Yeah, and you mentioned the vaccine, and the whole world is waiting on the vaccine. That's the truth. But, you know, we spoke to, there's an Irish doctor that we've had on, Paul O'Brien. He's been a couple of times, and he's based in China and you know, has been in Wuhan. And he was saying that they've rolled out a vaccine a few months ago that they've implemented. What was it, Martin? Already 500,000 people had been basically through the trial. All the military
forced through the trial, Tony.
Shush. Now, listen, it's a different system. It's not exactly democratic. But then again, I suppose that brings us to a really good point. America's democracy really very closely failed, didn't it?
It did become very close to failing. And, you know, the TV host here in America named Chris Hayes on MSNBC says that, you know, at this point, every single U.S. presidential election, like, we are playing Russian roulette. And we're waiting to find out every time, like, whether we actually are going to blow our brains out. And I have no idea what would happen if in a situation where Biden won by what he probably will win by the popular vote, like 8 million, but lost the electoral college and the election. Like, what would Americans do in that situation? Like, I don't know what the answer is. What would happen in a situation where it really did come down to one state, like in 2000, and the Republicans were able to steal it again? I think probably outside of the U.S. and even in the U.S., most people don't know the true story of what happened in Florida in 2000, which is that there was a very careful study that was done by a consortium of news agencies and newspapers that came out, I think it was September 16th, 2001. It was somewhere around there. It was very soon after September 11th. And so no one paid attention to what they found, and the people who did pay attention didn't want to talk about it. But what they found was that if all of the votes had been counted in Florida, Gore won.
Yeah.
And the election was stolen, and Gore should have been president. And so that could very easily have happened again if it had been close enough this year. So Chris Hayes is right. We're just playing Russian roulette.
Sorry to push in, but am I right in saying that one of the reasons they won is because when they marched in, they said that we won and we just need to get this ratified, whereas the other side said let's have everything counted. And they went, well, our lawyers were better than their lawyers, basically, was one of the arguments I thought that I read in one of the outcomes of that they were on the back foot and almost conceded before they'd actually had the argument properly. Or am I remembering that incorrectly?
No, you're remembering it pretty much right. I mean, the thing you have to understand about the Democratic Party is that the people at the top of it are kind of uniformly nerd lawyers.
Yeah.
And so both parts of that are important, right? Like, they're super duper nerds in the fact that they think that the arena of, like, political force is illegitimate and they're terrified of it and they don't want to get into it and they don't want people protesting in the streets and they're just scared of people in general. And the lawyer part is also important because lawyers think that the world is run by words and books when it really isn't, you know? Like, it would be nice if it were, but it's not. And so the Republicans, as you say, just established the narrative immediately, like, we won. What's the holdup? Why are these losers still complaining? And you'll notice even now in a much graver situation this year is that there's no, like, unified Democratic message of, like, why are these losers still pretending that they won? Like, the Republicans are extremely good at one thing. They're not good at running governments. They're not good at coming up with ideas or protecting people from pandemics. They are extremely good at marketing. Like, that's where they come from. And the political writer William Grider here in the US, like, he once said that, like, you know, if politics were a car, like the car that the Republicans would come up with and sell to America, like, would look great, like, super duper cool. And, like, as soon as you turned it on, it would explode.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the deal. It's you were remembering it correctly.
Yeah, no, just sorry, Martin. I know you wanted to come in, but I also think it's important that we point out that is so true in politics as well. It's the act of controlling the narrative, a lot of it. Sorry, Martin, go on ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say, when you talk about it being crazy at the moment, I mean, if you look at Texas, where they are actively fighting to keep Trump, 1 in 26 people is infected of those tested in Texas. I mean, it's riddled. It's beyond riddled. How are they going to draw this back? How is Biden going to draw this back once January comes around? I mean, it's so widespread. There are so many people infected in America. It's exactly what happens when you let this thing run riot. It's exactly what happens.
It is. And I mean, again, we just have to, like, knock on wood, pray that one of these vaccines is going to work, ideally more than one of them, you know, and it will be something where I'm sure you've read about, like one of the promising vaccines requires 2 doses. It requires super low temperatures, but then another one does not and is much more like a regular vaccine. So we just have to hope that it will come through, and it will come through sooner rather than later, because there really, in the United States at this point, there is no other answer. And Biden cannot, even if he were to come into office, as he probably will, with like a competent plan ready to go, like, it is too late. It's too late, number one. Number two, he can't control the actions of, you know, 50% of America. Like, they will just decide that, you know, he's asking people to stay home just because, you know, he hates Christianity, like, whatever it is, like, they're
he's a communist. He's a tell the truth.
Exactly. He's a communist, and it's a plot together with Venezuela.
But it's not particularly hopeful that the 50% of people who will need to take a vaccine will actually take a vaccine. They're the ones most likely not to take it. So, I mean, it's real stormy waters ahead. Real stormy waters ahead.
Now, the one potential answer, particularly, you know, like, if the vaccines do work, that I propose is that we should allow Trump to create his own Trump brand vaccine, you know, and allow him to sell it at, you know, and make $3 billion. Like, it would absolutely be worth it. It would be worth the $3 billion to.
Funny enough, you're dead, right?
That is actually, as mad as that is, it might work. Yeah. When you, what are we looking at the end, John? I think we're looking at something around 72 million people voted for him.
Yeah, you know, when all is said and done, because again, remember, in America, it takes us like 7 months to count all the votes.
I know.
When everything is said and done, it's going to be more than that. And Biden, of course, the margin between them is going to be even larger than it is now. But yeah, it is. 72, who knows, 73, 74 million people, like, who looked at the last 4 years in America and decided, I want 4 more years of that.
Yeah. And what's the death toll now at the moment, John? Oh. It's well over the 200,000.
Oh, it's well over.
It is. You know, it depends on how you count it. You know, officially, there have been now, I think yesterday, it went over 250,000 deaths directly attributed to COVID. But that's not really the right way to count it. Like, the Centers for Disease Control here did a calculation of how many excess deaths there have been due to COVID, which means not just the official count, but people who died who probably did have COVID, but they were not diagnosed, deaths sort of related to COVID overwhelming medical facilities and so forth. And they found that by, I think it was October 3rd, so 6 weeks ago, there were 300,000 excess deaths due to COVID. So that's, again, 6 weeks ago, there were 300,000. That means by the time Trump leaves office, the number of excess deaths is almost certainly going to be 400,000.
Like, wow.
I think yesterday, I forget how many people died.
It's
like 1,800, something like that.
Yeah, it was over 1,600 anyway. And I mean, it was averaging already 1,000 per day for the last number of weeks. And it's just been, like, every day it was a new record was broken. Every day was a new record was broken. And it was, you know, this is in the United States of America, which brings me back to I suppose, how we've just come out of this contested election, which was, the world watched it. Like, John, you've never seen people, what, like, Ireland has never been as enthralled in an election as we were in this one. John King from CNN has been on all our TV shows now in the last number of weeks, because he's now, him and his magic board are now a huge celebrity here. Like, I know it's mad, but it's true. It's like, he's been on, we're inviting him over. Bord Fáilte are going to give him a holiday and everything, because we've decided we all love CNN now, and this is what we do. But as close as that's come, you made a point at the outset that the next Trump will be more articulate and more intelligent and more able to appeal to what is, again, going back to something that I stole from you, the system is set up to serve the opulent against the majority. How, like, the next 4 years of Biden, he's going to be on the back foot immediately, isn't he?
He will be. Both because of the objective circumstances and just because it is Biden's tradition and the Democratic tradition to be on your back foot. Like, even when given every opportunity not to be, they will be. You know, so I don't know. I wish I knew what was going to happen so I could decide whether to flee or not. But, you know, the thing is that I guess the good news, the luck so far in America has been this. Yeah. As the world knows, Trump is perhaps the world's laziest human being.
Yeah.
And he cannot do anything that requires more than 5 seconds of concentration. And, like, he gets to the end of the 5 seconds and he gets distracted and he goes off and does something else. And so we're lucky about that. We're lucky that he's so old. We're lucky that he's so unhealthy. We're lucky that when we got somebody whose instincts were, like, truly deeply authoritarian, that he was just this guy who might, you know, want to be the supreme leader, but just couldn't execute because that would take too much effort. And, you know, and he had all the Fox and Friends stuff on his TiVo to watch. And so we did get very lucky. And I hope and pray that we're going to get lucky again in this sense, is that it's difficult to think of the potential Trumps as having this, like both the intelligence and the sort of rational self-interest that you need and the ability to execute that Trump does not, while also having Trump's true skills. Like, he is a genius at television. He's a genius at social media. And he's a genius at just performance. Like, whether you love or hate him, and particularly if you hate him, you have to be aware of the fact that he is a great performer for his audience. And for his audience, he actually is kind of hilarious. Like, even people who hate him should recognize that and understand that, like, that's a very appealing characteristic in a politician. It's why tons and tons of people like him. And, that was a lot of the secret of his success. And I hope, you know, again, like Tom Cotton, Ted Cruz, all of the heirs to the throne.
Mike Pompeo.
What, who's that? Scott Baio?
Yeah. No. Mike Pompeo
Mike Pompeo.
he definitely fancies himself, I'm telling you.
No, you're absolutely right. He could very easily run for president in 2024. But I just think they don't have the Trump spritziness. They don't have, like, there's a comedian here who described Trump as sort of like if you put Dean Martin in a peat bog and then dug him up after 1,000 years, you know, that would be Donald Trump. And they don't have that quality. They don't have the sort of like ossified, mummified Dean Martin quality.
But the GOP has turned into a crucible where these guys are made and brought along. So the real problem lies with the GOP, which is not going to change. They are going to have more people in the mold of Donald Trump. They're probably looking for one right this moment. A clever, articulate, motivated Donald Trump is probably what they're looking for at the moment.
I'm sure. Absolutely, that is the case. Now, of course, they are frozen, and maybe this will be a saving grace. Like, they're frozen by the fact that nobody can really get started until Trump himself, like, says that he's not going to run in 2024. And so that could also be good news, that he may sort of prevent people from gathering up all of the support and endorsements and so forth that you need to get momentum, you know, until like February in the election year, the next election year. And so it may stymie a lot of the people who might want to be the next Trump. For pure Schadenfreude, for pure like enjoying the suffering of others, what I like to imagine is Trump, you know, finally announcing he's not going to run in 2024, and then Don Jr. jumps in as a candidate, and Trump refuses to endorse him.
John, can I ask, going to the other side of the aisle, as they say, the Biden administration, I've seen very quickly after the election results started to come in that despite the best of our, well, the desires of people of our political ilk, the immediate thing said, oh, the reason he didn't win so quickly is because he was seen as of the left. Is there much truth in that, or are they bullshitting us? Because it doesn't check out when you look at the actual left-leaning candidates who got elected.
Right. Well, I mean, the thing about politics is that, I mean, you may have heard this famous saying from I think William Goldman was his name, who wrote a lot of fancy famous movies like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, a lot of others. And he said, you know, the thing you have to understand about Hollywood is that nobody knows anything. And the same thing is true about politics. Like with any big successful Hollywood blockbuster, people will come along afterwards and be like, oh, well, here's why it's this huge success.
Yeah.
And whenever there's a huge flop, people are like, oh, well, obviously anybody could have known that. And the fact is, nobody knows anything. And that is as true about politics as it is about movies. And, you know, maybe like who the hell knows? I mean, anything is possible, but no one actually knows anything. And as you say, maybe that's true. There is no evidence for it. Like, in fact, the evidence that does exist, you know, strongly suggests that's not the case. And so it's just like these are people, you know, as you say, this is bullshit. They're paid to bullshit. That's why they're hired. They're hired to tell stories.
Exactly. And they're hired to make sure that that's the narrative, as we said a few minutes ago. But I think it's important that like we look at it and go, you know, we got to remember, but for 2 weeks, Bernie Sanders was going to be the candidate, but for 2 weeks when all the forces of the center and center right of the Democratic Party came together and united to say this guy is actually going to win, it would have been Bernie running against Donald Trump. So, you know, and I suppose one of the successes Bernie had over the last 4 years, in my opinion, was removing the let's not talk about things as a socialist. Let's talk about things as in, you know, better healthcare, better, you know, $15 an hour minimum wage, all of these things that people want. But if you attach the label of, and by the way, that means it's socialist, then it became problematic with a lot of American voters, which is, you know, it obviously we find that crazy over here because we don't believe in the reds under the beds kind of myth. But is it just, am I oversimplifying to say that if Wall Street are celebrating, we should be more concerned that Biden is just going to be more of the same anyway.
I think you're 100% right about that. Like there are no situations where Wall Street is celebrating and that's good for anyone but them. You know, Wall Street pays very, 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 very close attention to politics because it is worth so much money to them. And they know what's going on probably better than anyone else does, certainly better than the three of us do. Like what is actually the conversations that are actually taking place among people who are actually going to wield real power. And so if they are celebrating, that is not good news for anyone else.
I suppose, do we think that, and here's a bit of in the prediction game, and I know it's not really your remit, but the next 4 years of a Biden administration, do you think he's literally just going to lay the groundwork so Kamala Harris can then go and try and ascend? Or do we see America actually, I don't know, become even more polarized?
Well, I mean, certainly, I think there are two separate questions. Like, I can easily imagine him abdicating in favor of Kamala Harris and America, thanks to that, in part, becoming yet somehow even more polarized than it is already. If I had to bet money, and fortunately I do not, because I could very easily be wrong about this, but human beings in general, men in particular, do not get to the summit of power and then be like, okay, yeah, so long. I could stay. Obviously, I could stay. But I just think leaving is the right thing to do.
Yeah. Like
men do not do that. And, you know, the funny thing about Donald Trump is that I think it is the case he truly did not want to be president. It was like a gambit to raise his profile so that he could renegotiate his contract with NBC and get more money. Suddenly, against all odds, he is. I really don't think he enjoyed being president very much. Like, he wanted to spend all this time tweeting and watching TV. And yet, it's so, like, whatever it is about power, it's so delicious, especially for men, that they don't, like, voluntarily give it up. So I have a hard time believing that Joe Biden, even if he has to run again at 81 years old.
Imagine.
And yeah. I think, too, that Joe, 4 years isn't a long time to undo the nasty that Trump has brought into American politics. I know it existed there beforehand, but he really brought it to the surface. And 4 years is not enough time to undo that. And you could have an existential crisis. And yet we have an existential crisis and it didn't really make any difference to politics. So it's very difficult to know what way it's going to go.
See, I think you are the voice in Joe Biden's head in 4 years, which is like, 4 years, it's a long time for me to be president.
Martin, what was your diagnosis? They gave you how long?
I don't know, a couple of months.
Yeah. John, Martin was diagnosed with like stage 4 cancer given a few months, and that was fucking 6 years ago. We can't get
it
rid of
more,
him.
9, 10, 11 years ago.
So he just won't go away, you know. But so that plays out our blows up all my ideas. Last thing for me, in terms of obviously COVID is this huge thing. We all hope for this vaccine. But the actual, I hate to use the term, and I'm sure you also respect it, but these culture wars that are still flaring up, they're actually importing them right now to Ireland and making it out as if we have this problem, which we don't. But we have politicians who want to bring it over. Is this where the agenda is going to be? This stupid make people fight over this ridiculous stuff and not care about the actual reasons that why people are suffering homelessness, inequality, you know, problems with education, healthcare, or is this what we have to live on for the next 4 years?
Well, I would advise you to do everything that you possibly can to nip any U.S. type of politics in the bud, like. Do everything possible to stop that from happening because, I mean, the United States is sort of the epitome of the standard way of ruling people, which everyone who's ever read a book knows is divide and conquer. You know, the people at the top of U.S. society have tried to divide the United States into two warring tribes, the better to rule over all of them. And they've really perfected it. It's incredibly ugly. Ultimately, the sort of the two warring classes of elites at the top of U.S. society hate each other, but they hate the rest of us even more. And so they really know what they're doing. And if you let smart politicians and rich people there do it, it's part of human nature for this kind of thing to be effective politics. Like, they're going to have more success than you might think. So try to stop them if you can.
Well, is my advice. But you can see
also, again, I emphasize that I may need to flee there. So
yeah. I am sitting in your spare room here. This is a sofa bed to my left here. So we'll
keep it. Here's the thing. You think you're joking?
No.
But I mean, so but anyway, I'm just begging you, like, keep things sane and functional there, because you may see me before long.
look, I know I said it was my last question, but it would be remiss of me not to ask. The intercept itself, how are things since the Glenn Greenwald left?
You know, I mean, this is a big, complicated issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I will always, always respect and appreciate the fact that Glenn co-founded The Intercept. I mean, he has accomplished things that no human being could dream of, like just via like a laptop, sometimes sitting on the beach in Brazil. Like, it's just an incredible story of human accomplishment. And part of the accomplishment is that he started this place that has really grown into a tiny powerhouse of investigative reporting that uncovers things that nobody else is doing, that approaches things from an angle that nobody else is doing. And so, I mean, I'm personally very, very, very sad that Glenn left, but I think that the Intercept will continue to thrive. Fingers crossed.
John Schwartz of The Intercept, thank you so much again for taking the time to talk to us. We really appreciate it. And I have the sofa bed here. It's ready for you.
John,
so.
John, I have a spare room at my place. It's out in the country. It's much better than where he is. So don't be worrying about it. There's a spare room. A few fields around you, you'll be fine.
You'd actually you'd be much happier with Martin because you wouldn't have all the animals crawling around you. But look, we really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you again. Like, I love talking to you guys. I love hearing from people out in the rest of the world where the fever has not overtaken everyone yet. So I look forward to talking to you guys again soon.
Thanks very much. Listen, thanks, folks, John. Appreciate you all listening again. patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Please, please, please. It makes all the difference to us. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.